welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the French Chef of free speech, because you remember Julia Child, don't you? Don't you? She was the French Chef, and she was cooking you up something that was good, and that's what we're doing for you. We're cooking you up something that's is good for you and tastes great, too. And so go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send badly needed fundage. If you need further instructions, Jeremy can help you with that.
You can mail your check or money order payable to RBN. Mail it to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Call in your debit or credit card number to Julie. She will take your money, and you can also donate via PayPal. Keep free speech alive for shows like this and many others.
All right. Okay, so this is part two of the Patrick and Jeremy show, and part one was largely talking about Vladimir Putin and his new war, the new front in the war, which is the war on trannyism and deviancy. So where are we moving for part two? What are we going to do in this show?
Well, according to RT, the CIA weighs in on alleged nuclear threat from Russia. U.S. intelligence agencies do not see practical evidence that Moscow is getting ready to use nukes, according to the director, William Burns. The CIA does not believe that Russia President Vladimir Putin is currently preparing to deploy nuclear weapons in Ukraine. Its chief, William Burns, said in an interview on Sunday, quoting Burns, "We have to take very seriously any kinds of threats given everything that's at stake." He told CBS News, Evening News with Nora O'Donnell. However, he acknowledged that we don't see any practical evidence today in the U.S. intelligence community that Putin is moving closer to actual use or that there's any imminent threat of using nuclear weapons, tactical nuclear weapons. When asked if the Russian leader was bluffing when speaking about ready to use all the means at his disposal, if the country's territorial integrity were threatened, Burns said it was very hard to say at this point. So on the one hand, he's confident that Putin won't use nukes, but on the other hand, he's saying it's very hard to say. I think that Russia has been very clear that they are willing to use all means necessary if NATO does use nukes. And it was NATO that first threatened nukes in this Ukrainian war. Is that not right?
Well, that's correct. And I mean, the thing is, the United States, they've always gone around saying nothing's off the table. Nothing's off the table. And they're talking about North Korea, when they're talking about Iran. It's always, you know, Hillary Clinton or whoever. They're always saying everything's on the table, right? We're not taking any options off the table. Well, one of the options, obviously, is nuclear weapons. So they're always doing that level of threatening. Now, countries have military doctrines, and countries with nuclear weapons have nuclear doctrines, at least certainly the United States and Russia do. And, you know, all Putin did was repeat Russia's military doctrine, its nuclear doctrine. It will use nuclear weapons in these cases, right? If it is, you know, if it is attacked first, so they'll, you know, they have the second use, and then if its existence as a state is threatened, so you know, this is probably pretty similar to the American nuclear doctrine. And so I mean, that's all he did really, is just repeat the nuclear doctrine and say this isn't a bluff. Now the United States, what they've been doing all year, and even before the military action in Ukraine started, they've been saying, they've been accusing Russia of wanting to use it and then threatening Russia with retaliation if it does. So, you know, it's kind of weird. You know, if you had a drunk guy or even a sober guy who just came up to you for no good reason and started saying, you try something, I'm going to smash you in the face. You try something, I'm going to smash you in the face. Well, you're not trying anything, right? I'm going to smash somebody who's being aggressive to you and then starts saying, if you do something, if you try something, I'm going to smash you in the face. Who's the person being aggressive?
Right. One thing I compare, you tell me if this is a good comparison. We've used it before. Let's say that the United States broke up and that Texas, you know, seceded during the breakup. And then let's just say that we had a government in Texas that was friendly to the United States and it had its own government and they were negotiating and all that. Now let's say that China came in and, overthrew the government in the United, in the Texas region, right? And China was threatening to make Texas part of China and to put nuclear weapons on the border of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of how I compared this whole Ukraine-Russia thing. And so, you know, in that case, you know, of course the U.S. government would push back and would not want to allow a foreign government to put nukes on it, the territory that once belonged to the United States, that is U.S. citizens in it. Mm-hmm. That's how the Ukraine-Russia conflict. Am I off on that?
That's a good one. Here's another one. Let's just say, now obviously Canada was never part of the United States, but let's just say, you know, Canada, you got English-speaking section, you got a French-speaking section. And let's just say, you know, the European Union or whatever, they didn't like the English-speaking Prime Minister of Canada, and they came in and engineered a coup and put in a French. And you know, the funny thing about Zelensky is Zelensky's actually a Russian speaker. He's not a Ukrainian speaker. He has been learning Ukrainian, and his Ukrainian has gotten better over the past couple of years. But he's a Russian speaker. But at any rate, let's just get back to the Canada thing. So you've got the Canadian government overthrown. A new French-speaking prime minister comes in and immediately outlaws English. English is no longer an official language of Canada, and you can't have English schools and all sorts of stuff. All this anti-English legislation, and then let's just say that New Brunswick and Nova Scotia break off, right? And then then the French-speaking government of Canada is like bombing the hell out of New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, and they ask for our protection. It's, you know, that type of thing. I don't know what maybe that elucidates things for a few Canadians. I don't know if that makes an impression on our American listeners.
Yeah, I feel like the Texas one is maybe more.
Yeah, you're probably right.
But, you know, because Texas has always been part of the U.S.
Hey, I got one that uses Scotland and England. Maybe I'll save that for Mark Collett.
Yeah, I mean, you've got this territory in Ukraine that was always Russian, and you know, during the Soviet collapse, they formed their own government. But the government that was formed was pro-Russian. They negotiated with Russia. They had good ties with Russia. And all of this was overthrown in the 2014 Maidan coup. So, I mean, this whole war in Ukraine really goes back to 2014. It didn't really start with Russia coming into Ukraine. It started in 2014, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are things that you could even look back even further, because in late 2003, early 2004, you had the Orange Revolution. So you've had these color revolutions that have gone on, but certainly this current round goes back to 2013, 2014, the February Maidan Revolution, so-called revolution, the coup d'etat, Victoria Nuland's coup d'etat. Yeah, because that's when these Jews and their Goyim allies came in and outlawed Russian. And, you know, the weird thing is a lot of these people involved are native Russian speakers, right? Zelensky, Tymoshenko, who was prime minister after the Orange Revolution. She learned Ukrainian because Russian and Ukrainian are pretty similar. So if you put your mind to it, if you're a Russian speaker, you can learn Ukrainian pretty fast. But this isn't even their language. These Jews are Russian speakers, but they're anti-Russia.
Right. So, you know, in the Texas scenario, let's suppose that, you know, Dallas and Wichita Falls, you know, decided to stick with the United States, and they were being abused by the rogue government of Texas in the scenario that we're painting, where Texas breaks off, and this foreign country comes in and starts abusing them, you know, abusing the Wichita Falls and Dallas region and Lake Texoma region. And so America comes in and takes over those regions again. I mean, that's basically what Russia did. They're just taking over regions that were historically part of Russia. And all of Ukraine historically was part of Russia. So really, it wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be far-fetched if Putin decided to take the whole of Ukraine, which I think that he should. I don't think that he should stop at a Donetsk.
So, if you look at the map of Ukraine in 2013, before this stuff happened, it would be the same as the map of Ukraine in 1956. 1956 was the last time before 2014 that the boundaries got changed. So in 56, you had the Crimea Peninsula was transferred from Russia to Soviet Russia to Soviet Ukraine. But, you know, if you go back before World War II, there was a period between the two wars where some of the western part of Ukraine, that was in Poland between the wars. Now, before World War I, the Russian Empire was even bigger than the Soviet Union, so it was more expansive. If you were to go back a few centuries, you get Poland and Lithuania that included part of western Ukraine. And that's, you know, that's part of the historical reason, the historical basis for this east-west divide in Ukraine, where, you know, western Ukraine, they're different in certain ways. Their language tends to be different, and there's a kind of Ukrainian Catholicism. I don't know a whole lot about it. Doctrinally, I don't know a whole lot about it. So there are parts of Ukraine that Putin might not want to digest. It might taste bad. But one thing is, because the pipeline, the Brotherhood pipeline, goes through that part of Ukraine, even though he might not want it ethnically, because why would he want to take over territory inhabited by people who might cause trouble for him? But the pipeline, now the only way to deliver Russian gas to Europe is through a pipeline that goes through that part of Ukraine. So maybe he'll have to take it over.
Well, I mean, which the whole purpose of the Nord Streams 1 and 2, right? To sort of circumvent that.
Exactly.
And now those are supposedly destroyed, but I've read that they can be repaired maybe quicker than what we thought.
Well,
and as we get into the winter,
I
think Germany and most of Europe are going to, I think the citizens are going to want to cut that deal with Russia and the Nord Stream if it can be repaired. I think it's going to cause a point of conflict between the people of, you know, Germany and of Eastern Europe, between them and their rulers. So I'm predicting you're going to see a big backlash from the people in Europe over this gas.
It would be good.
Yeah.
It would be good. And, you know, following on something that we said in part one of the Patrick and Jeremy show aired on Tuesday evening, it's one of the amazing things about Jewish power is, you know, it's not just that the Jews cry out as they strike you, but then the person that gets stricken starts screaming at the Chinese or somebody else, you know? So,
because the Jew
in pain, he strikes you, and then you go screaming at the slanty-eyed chink in the bar. I mean, it makes absolutely no sense. And so, like this pipeline thing, this was a Jewish attack on Germany and the rest of Europe. And yet people aren't, you know, people may be very frustrated with it. People may get very angry about it, but they're not going to blame Jews. And, you know, one of the sad things is I was listening to the Duran with, what's his name? Alex Christofaru and Alexander Mercuris. And, you know, they do a good geopolitical podcast. It's good, but they don't talk about Jewish power. And then they had a guest on today who is from Serbia, and he's talking about, the history of the past 30 years in Serbia, which has been attacked by NATO, bombed by NATO, and has some very legitimate gripes. But even then, this guy, this filmmaker, when he's talking about Serbs, he has to say, you know, the Croats in World War II, they put us in concentration camps with gypsies and Jews. Right, that, like, Serbia is very much in the crosshairs of Jewish power, and yet, even in the crosshairs of Jewish power, people feel like they have to identify with the Jews. They have to invoke the Holocaust. This is another Holocaust, but this one's at us. You know, you see it all the time on Fox News.
Well, it's deeply ingrained in the Western psyche and in the global psyche. You know, the last guy that talked about Jewish power with a funny mustache had his country completely crushed.
Crushed.
And I think people realize that, and they know the boundaries. It's kind of a boundary that's just, you know, it's like psychologically set in everybody's mind. You don't cross that boundary.
Yeah.
And for those of us...
I mean, even Putin, and, you know, obviously I'm not bad-mouthing Putin, but, you know, what does he talk about? He talks about Ukraine as being run by, you know, neo-Nazis or Nazis. He wants to denazify Ukraine. And obviously I wish he wouldn't go there. But, you know, it's so deeply ingrained in everybody's brains. And, I mean, I think in Putin's mind, maybe he feels it's useful for him to appeal. Oh, I mean, one thing is, what Nazi means to a Russian and what Nazi means to an American isn't the same thing. To an American, Nazis mean those bastards that killed the 6 million Jews, and to a Russian, it means those bastards who killed the 15 million Russians. So it's kind of a different thing, but still, you know, I wish you wouldn't go there.
Yeah, and it's like you know that he knows. I mean, he has to know. You would think this would be a good opportunity for him to call out the Jew, and I think that's where a lot of criticism from Putin comes to play on people from our side. They're like, well, he's going all out. Why doesn't he just call out the Jew? But, I mean, apparently there's certain boundaries, even in this recent excellent speech that he gave, there's certain boundaries that he's not willing to cross, and that's one of them. I mean, it would be so easy for him to say, hey, you know, Victoria Nuland, Anthony Blinken, I mean, you know, these people running America are Jewish, Zelensky's Jewish. I mean, come on, guys, here's the deal. But he doesn't say that. He frames the whole speech, a very good speech, by the way, but he frames it in such a way that he does not have to call out the Jew.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why a lot of people on our side are saying, well, this whole thing is framed. This whole thing's a stage, and Putin's part of it. You know, people are saying that.
Now, I don't really expect to hear Putin call out the Jews, but it wouldn't be him first. If somebody in Russia is going to call out the Jews, it would probably be Dmitry Medvedev, who has been the bad cop to Putin's good cop. And he has said, like,
there's a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger.
Do Do you truly want to stay out of the system? Are you prepared to buy into the biggest scam since the Iraqi dinar? If not, then put your money where it belongs, in your possession, not in the hands of an international MLM cartel. At Kettle Moraine Limited, we will provide you with the finest Swiss-minted detachable gram sheets of pure 24-karat gold for hundreds of dollars less than the so-called privately issued credit cards with elusive gold backing. Gold backing? The only gold that I want is in my back pocket, not backed by promises of an operation even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is suspect of, giving a rating of C-. To get the full story, visit Sierra Madre Precious Metals.com and go to the Valcombe Bullion Vault. Once you have read the whole story about the scam being perpetrated on an unsuspecting public and how you can avoid being a victim by purchasing these beautiful, barterable, tradable sheets of gold at tremendous savings and in the strictest of privacy, be prepared to take the steps to protect your wealth with the purchase of the real deal. Detachable 50-gram gold bars from Kettle Moraine Limited by calling 602-799-8214. Ask about our 1-ounce Valcombe detachable bars, which break into 1/10-ounce bars. And don't forget, for all of your precious metal needs, whether buying or having the need to sell, call Kettle Moraine Limited. Remember, no dinar, no celery, and no carrots. If you buy from someone else, tell them you want AU, not BS. Call Kettle Moraine LTD today at 602-799-8214. Kettle Moraine LTD, 602-799-8214.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at TLBTalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Somebody in Russia is going to call out the Jews. It would probably be Dmitry Medvedev, who has been, he's been the bad cop to Putin's good cop. And he has said, he has been the bad cop. And so it could be in a more diplomatic way, perhaps, Sergei Lavrov. I wouldn't expect it from Putin himself. But if Dmitry Medvedev or Sergei Lavrov, if they start saying something about Jews, then things will get interesting.
But getting back full circle to this article, the whole point of the article was the CIA is saying basically Russia does not have the stomach to use nuclear weapons, no matter what. And I think that's gaslighting in a way, the West into thinking that we're not this. They're trying to make us believe the situation is not as bad as it is, but it's bad. It's bad, and nukes could go flying any time now. That's what I think. I'm surprised. I'm shocked when I don't wake up and see a major city in the West in a mushroom cloud. I'm very shocked when I don't wake up and see that. And they're trying to tell it's not that bad, but really it is that bad.
It is, and I keep coming back to this. It's amazing that we're on the brink of nuclear war, and yet nobody will talk about the Jews. That's even more taboo. It wouldn't be, if I talk about the Jews, somebody might call me an anti-Semite, so we might as well just end civilization.
Right. let's push the button. Hey, do you remember? Do you remember the video on MTV in the mid '80s?
Yeah,
from the rock group Genesis. And
yes,
they did a song called "Land of Confusion," and it was puppets. Yes. It was puppets of the leaders at that time.
Puppets of Ronald Reagan in bed. Yeah,
and Ronald Reagan was in the bed at the end of the video, and he woke up and he was gonna push the button that said nurse. Like he was going to call the nurse, but he accidentally pushed the button that said nuke.
Yeah, I remember that. And I didn't really watch MTV, but I do remember that. I saw that.
I mean, Genesis, I mean, that, you know, of course they were leftist liberals, I'm sure, but like that was just a raw commentary on, you know, Ronald Reagan's, you know, senility. I mean, very, very much comparable to, well, sort of comparable to Joe Biden. I think Biden's much worse.
Joe Biden's much worse. And Ronald Reagan, it wasn't so much senility. He was a career actor. He got into politics late, and then even then he got into national politics much later. I mean, he had been governor of California for 8 years, but, and so, you know, he was a little bit sleepy, a little unenergetic, a little bit disengaged. It wasn't until really the last couple of years where he started showing signs of Alzheimer's, which he had. And so after about a year after he left the White House was the last time he made any public appearances. And then he just spent the rest of his life in parks watching children and dogs play.
I mean, the last 4 years of Reagan, I mean, you could pretty much consider that George Bush the Elder's, you know, first term of presidency. I mean, he pretty much ruled things.
George Bush the Elder, well, I mean, he was part of it. And George Bush the Elder had, he had brought in James Baker, who I guess by that time was Secretary of Treasury. But you also had Howard Baker came in the last couple of years as chief of staff, and Howard Baker referred to himself as the prime minister. But it certainly really wasn't. And Reagan was getting overruled. And Reagan had I guess it was 1986, he had a summit meeting with Mikhail Gorbachev in Reykjavik, Iceland. And the two of them had a one-on-one meeting just with their translators. And they came out and announced that they have decided to abolish nuclear weapons. And George Shultz and Caspar Weinberger were like, no, you won't. No, you won't.
No,
you know, I've never seen anything like that until, until Trump meets with Kim Jong-un. And says, okay, we're gonna sign a peace treaty, and Mike Pompeo and John Bolton say, no, you aren't.
I was thinking it was like Biden saying, oh, we're gonna abolish cancer. But no, I know what you're saying. I was a child, so I have to read retrospectively the history of those days, because as a child in the 80s, I wasn't paying attention. But I mean, reading back the history, yeah, and I remember that. Yeah, we're gonna abolish nuclear weapons. No, not gonna happen.
Oh, it was really, really exciting, because I remember I was riding my bicycle and I was listening to reports coming out of, you know, every hour or two I'd hear a news blast, and I was just staying tuned. What are they talking about? What are they talking about?
Truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's SusannaSecret.com. SusannaSecret.com.
How absurd does woke gender ideology have to get? I'm Peter Serafine with today's Liberty Minute. A number of girls playing for a high school volleyball team in Vermont have been banned from using their own locker room after filing a complaint with the school about a transgender teammate. The dispute started after a transgendered player at Randolph Union High School allegedly made an inappropriate comment to some girls while changing in the locker room. School authorities replied to the complaints with, "There is plenty of space where students who feel uncomfortable can change in private." According to Vermont's state law, students can play sports and use the locker room that corresponds to the gender with which they identify. And apparently, if a transgendered student is inappropriate, too bad. The biological girls get pushed out. Ah, isn't equity great? Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivis Pashem, Parabellum.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Carrie: great product, and I will continue to use. I've been taking it for over a year now. I'm 60 and feel great. I would highly recommend this product to anyone over the age of 40. Amazon customer, 5 stars. I'm quite happy about it. Extendivite has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. Amazon customer, 5 stars. Great product. I use regularly, and I rarely get sick. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Because I remember I was riding my bicycle and I was listening to reports coming out of, you know, the, every hour or two I'd hear the news blast, and I was just staying tuned. What are they talking about? And, it was amazing. And you did get the, intermediate range nuclear weapons ban, or an intermediate range, missile ban. You got a missile ban out of it, but it was for one class of weapons, and it did abolish that class of weapons. So it was still something significant.
I was riding my bike as well, but I was like 10 years old riding a BMX and I was listening to the Duran Duran, not the Duran, but Duran Duran. I didn't care. But I remember. No, in all seriousness, I remember as a child in the 80s, I mean, at the end of the Cold War, like, we were all still in fear of nuclear war. Like, it could happen in any minute, you might as well live it up. That was sort of the idea of the 80s.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it was a big deal in the 80s, and you had this, you had these movements. I think one was called SANE. There was the, what was it called? There are these big movements to end nuclear weapons, or freeze nuclear weapons. There were these movements. They were really big in the Democratic Party. And that's what the Democrats were about back then in the 80s, at least a substantial wing of the Democratic Party.
Well, to their credit,
doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah, to their credit, you had a legit anti-war movement. And I mean, sure, they were seen as pro-Soviet Union, right? The anti-war movement sort of got thrown into the pro-Soviet Union communist movement.
But then, of course, by the second half of the 80s, when Mikhail Gorbachev was the leader of the Soviet Union, you know, you'd be called pro-Soviet, but, you know, Mikhail Gorbachev was doing these fundamental reforms, and obviously things were changing. I think to a large extent that it was a missed opportunity. And I, you know, you made the comment about Bush, and, you know, Bush had a certain amount of influence in the second Reagan term, but then of course he was elected. He replaced Reagan as president for 4 years, and And our problem today, go back to Bush,
who would have been president in 1981. When was Reagan the attempted assassination on Reagan? Okay. Like January.
He was inaugurated in January, and I think it was early April when you had the when he was shot.
Wasn't that 81?
Yeah, that was 81. About 3 months into his term.
Who would have taken the presidency? Bush the Elder.
Yeah, it would have been Bush the Elder. Not only that, though, John Hinckley, who shot Bush, I mean, who shot Reagan, had like a few days earlier had dinner with one of Bush's sons. I think it was it Melvin? I mean, Bush had three sons, I think, or four sons. You know,
this is
George Jr.
Yeah, this is too much. It's a little too conspiratorial for me, Patrick.
No, but that's not a secret.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
one of the Bush sons.
Of all the Bushes, which one was Bush the older? H.W.?
H.W., George Herbert Walker Bush.
I mean, he was definitely the brains of the outfit of all of the Bush family. The other ones were just freaking retarded, dude.
Like, according to Ralph Nader, I mean, because Ralph Nader knew H.W. Bush's father, Prescott Bush, who was the senator from Connecticut, and Nader's from Connecticut, and so he had dealings with Prescott Bush. He actually had dealings with H.W. Bush. He never met W., even though he ran against him. W. refused to debate with Nader, so they never debated. But according to...
You knew Ralph Nader personally?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I don't anymore, but I used to be on first name basis with him.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, and he said, he would say that there was a noticeable cognitive decline from generation to generation. It wasn't noticeable. I think it was a pronounced cognitive decline. Yeah.
Because you gotta admit, Bush Jr. and Jeb Bush, I mean, they're just a couple of retards, dude. Like, how in the hell do they actually function?
it's amazing. You know, like the people that wind up being president. So we've got the Biden or the Brandon, who's a complete joke. And Kamala is such a chlamydia. She's such a joke. And he was kind of a joke. He wasn't a funny joke, though. Dana Carvey, who did his impressions in Saturday Night Live, it wasn't so much an impression as a caricature.
Yeah.
But it was a caricature using kind of the, it was exaggerating or emphasizing his lack of articulateness. That's probably not even a word, so I'm probably emphasizing my own lack of articulateness and goofiness. You know, so he was awkward and goofy, but you know, he wound up becoming president. But for his son. Because his son was really stupid, was just dumb, and then Biden, you know, these they're just, it's how can we consider ourselves a serious country?
But with all that being said, I would take 1992 Biden. I would that would be a great presidential candidate. Well,
he still wasn't very smart, and he had foot and mouth disease, and of course he had run for president in 88 or in 87, and had to drop out because of multiple gaffes, the biggest of which was being caught plagiarizing British Labour Party leader Neil Kinnock's campaign speech, his stump speech. It was completely plagiarized.
Yeah, in 88 you had Bush and Mondale, right? Mondale?
In 88 it was Bush against Michael Dukakis. And I've met Dukakis too.
Well, who's Mondale?
I didn't get to know him, but I met him. And, you know, he was a reasonable person. He wasn't stuck up or anything.
Well, who's Mondale? Why do I have that in my mind?
He was in 1984. And he lost 49 states to Ronald Reagan.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's coming back to me now. I mean, but back to this whole nuclear war thing. I mean, they're really trying to tell us that nuclear war. On the one hand, they're saying that Putin is unhinged and insane, basically, and that he can't be negotiated with. But on the other hand, they're saying, well, but he's not going to use nuclear weapons. That's just too crazy. I mean, isn't that cognitive dissonance? I mean, on display.
Yeah, nothing makes sense.
You know Russia would use it. I mean, everything that Russia said they would do, they've done. You know, since back in 2013, not since back in 2008 when they rolled into Georgia and secured that area. Everything Russia said they would do, they've done. So why would we doubt them? You know,
the thing is, there's no need for them to use tactical nuclear weapons in Ukraine. They don't need to do that. Now, if they are going to be threatened, if they are going to be directly attacked, and their government, their existence as, you know, a state is threatened, they're saying they will use nukes the old-fashioned way. You know, and destroy civilization. It's kind of like the ultimate Samson option. But using them on the battlefield in Ukraine, why? They're winning.
Well, yeah, I mean, Medvedev has already said, like, the U.S., the West doesn't want to risk, like, cities in Europe and Washington, D.C. and New York. They don't want to risk that. I mean, he's already, you know, put that out on the table that, hey, if we ever go nuclear, it's going to go all out. It's not going to be something. Right.
And that doctrine of using nuclear weapons as the ultimate deterrent, if our existence is at threat, we're just going to unleash everything. That's Eisenhower. That's Eisenhower. Yeah. Eisenhower, like, because the Soviet Union was a bigger, had a much, you know, it's obviously more than twice as big landmass as the United States. It had a larger population. The Soviet Union had a larger population than the United States, and maybe there were a lot of overestimates of its industrial base, but Eisenhower thought, I don't want to compete with them. I don't want to have to try to compete with them, company for company, division for division. So we're just gonna load up on the nukes, and if they cross, and we'll draw lines, and if they cross the lines, we're just gonna unleash everything. That was Eisenhower.
Well, here's what I think. You tell me what you think of this. This is my opinion, Jeremy's opinion, based on what I've read and studied and talked to you and Dr. Duke about. All right. I think with winter coming on and the rainy season, and you got a lot of mud, you know, going on in that area, Russian tanks are definitely superior to whatever Ukraine has. I think the next step of escalation is going to be Russia just roving through and taking all of Ukraine, just taking it out before the winter hits conventionally, and just taking the entirety of the Ukraine and negotiating a surrender with Zelensky. That's what I think is going to happen.
Pretty close. I think a scenario kind of like that, where it just becomes undeniable that Russia's unstoppable there. Zelensky, he's issued a presidential decree that nobody can negotiate with Vladimir Putin. I think Zelensky, in your scenario, I think at the very end, instead of Zelensky negotiating, Zelensky goes into exile in Tel Aviv or Miami, one or the other. And then a military person or somebody else, negotiates with Russia. And then the settlement would probably be about four or five more provinces being annexed to Russia, and the remainder of Ukraine, the rump Ukraine, becoming kind of a satellite.
Well, because in your scenario, the military will overthrow Zelensky, in your scenario.
They would overthrow him, or he would just go into exile.
Yeah.
There's nothing for Zelensky to be gained by negotiating anything, because, you know, negotiating a surrender, negotiating anything, he could have negotiated before the war started. He could have negotiated in March. In fact, there were negotiations in March, and he would have gotten a much, much better deal. And so through his so-called leadership, and to a large extent, he's just a puppet and a proxy of the Jews in the State Department. But through his so-called leadership, and not negotiating his intransigency, Ukraine's lost, most importantly, like tens of thousands, maybe by that time, hundreds of thousands of men, and just been devastated, losing territory. He has no future.
And then in the worst case scenario, very worst case, NATO does a nuke in the Donetsk, and Russia replies by hitting European and American cities.
Yeah, and then what happens to RRBN?
I mean, what would even if one major city in America were nuked? I mean, how would that look? Supply lines? It would be COVID times 100, maybe times 1,000. Mm-hmm. You know, supply lines cut, cell phones cut. You remember back in Christmas, the weekend of Christmas in 2020, here in Nashville, one of the buildings got bombed and people lost cell phone coverage for the entire weekend of the 25th, 26th, and 27th of December in 2020, just because of one building getting bombed. And I still didn't get to the bottom of who did that, but a major American city getting taken out. I mean, just one, that would be complete chaos.
So, really, world civilization is so interdependent. And, you know, if you take out chip manufacturing plants in Taiwan or machine tool manufacturing plants somewhere else, or, you know, you take out some of this this infrastructure, the economic infrastructure, next thing you know, agriculture gets shut down because our agriculture is dependent on, you know, nitrogen fertilizer, which is dependent on supply of energy. What happens if you don't have agriculture? Then you get food shortages. We can't support 8 billion people if we don't have agriculture running on all cylinders.
I mean, COVID 2020 shutdowns was just a fraction of how bad it could be when you disrupt the global supply line, because we're so interdependent.
I think really what I want to emphasize is these people at the State Department in particular, other parts of our government, parts of the British and European governments, Zelensky and his cronies, but, you know, basically Jewish power, they're willing to risk all of this. They're willing to risk it all.
That's what's crazy, isn't it? Just sit down with Putin and negotiate.
We're not even willing to call them out on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could all be solved with a competent statesman from the West negotiating with Putin. It could all have been solved. Mm-hmm. But instead, we're where we're at now.
I mean, the thing is, Putin's position from the get-go was basically the right position, the correct position. He had justice on his side. The aggressors have been, you know, Zio America the whole way through. And, you know, I have this friend. He's retired military. He's a retired colonel, and he doesn't like this tranny stuff. He doesn't like the Black Lives Matter stuff. He doesn't like the attacks on the First and Second Amendment. He doesn't like any of this stuff. And yet, somehow the Russians are still the bad guys. And I said, well, look, they didn't do this to us. They didn't do the trannies, the immigration, the black riots. They didn't do it. It was our Jews. Well, still, Putin's not your friend.
Well, and this brings me to the next article, if we want to finish up with this. Petraeus crawled out from under his rock and is weighing in. Did you read this one?
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen plan to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of happy packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
And this brings me to the next article, if we want to finish up with this. Petraeus crawled out from under his rock and is weighing in. Did you read this one?
Yeah.
Genius strategist Petraeus outlines a totally sensible response to Russian nukes. From RT, retired U.S. Army General David Petraeus, who, by the way, was so effectual during the Iraq War, right? Wasn't he such a great leader? Predicted that Washington would lead a devastating response to any Russian nuclear attack in Ukraine, wiping out all of Moscow's forces and military bases in the region. Petraeus, who briefly served as the CIA director
helicopter his counterinsurgency strategy failed in Afghanistan, told ABC News interview on Sunday that we would respond by leading a NATO collective effort that would take out every Russian conventional force that we can see and identify on the battlefield in Ukraine, also Crimea and every ship in the Black Sea. So they're talking about nuclear Petraeus. I mean, and I don't think he's relevant. I think the news is just highlighting him because of who he is. I don't think he has any relevancy at all. But he's talking about nuclear response in the area of Ukraine. They're thinking that all of this is going to stay in the area of Ukraine if it does go nuclear, you know, and in the Black Sea. I mean, who is this guy? Like, do we want to put any credence in what he says? This guy's completely irrelevant in my terms, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't think he shouldn't have a lot of credibility. And, of course, he was only briefly CIA director because he was carrying on with his secretary or something. I don't know. I can't even remember what it was. Oh, William from Montana would be the person to ask, if we could, because he did a study of Petraeus and McMaster and one of these other generals and read their, you know, all McMaster, does he have a PhD? I know Petraeus does. And so William from Montana read their dissertations. But I think they're just indoctrinated in this weird military world, and it's just absurd to think to look around and think, oh yeah, we can have a limited nuclear war and we'll be able to watch it on CNN and then, you know, go out for drinks later.
It's the whole mindset of the first and second Iraq wars, right? Where Americans just watched it from televisions and they weren't affected. That's not going to be the case. If nukes start flying, you're going to have major American cities hit. I mean, I don't think the Russians would. I think the Russians would definitely hit American cities if nukes started flying to Ukraine. It's not going to be confined to the Ukraine. It's going to affect Europe and America. Mm. And these people living in a dream world, in some sort of a Hollywood version of what we saw, you know, in the first and second Iraq wars, where we just watched this on TV and it was all like entertaining. That's not going to be the case.
It just became a spectator sport, just like the NFL. Yeah.
So what do we got time for?
Not much.
Well, we're at the end of the show, I guess. Appreciate you having me on, Patrick.
Yeah, hopefully there will be more shows.
Hopefully so. Stay classy. Can we stay classy?
I will stay classy.
It's a struggle.
And it's a struggle, but you know, compared to all these people out there, come on. Thank you. All right, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Geographic Radio.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.